Welcome to the Father State. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Don't forget to hit that like button and the notification bell. I have with me Amy Alcon, and she is the science advice goddess. Goddess, right?
Self-appointed.
It's self-appointed, but it doesn't matter. And she's the author of a book. Can I say this?
Oh, yeah.
Unethology.
You did that perfectly.
Oh, good. Unethology.
Because you're too polite, you don't say the bad words. And it's a field guide to living with guts and confidence.
Field guide to living with guts and confidence. First of all, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And so, very, very interesting book.
Thank you.
When I read the word, I thought of the word, but I didn't say the word. So listen, how did you come up with that title?
It's a neologism, a made-up word, and it's about un-effing yourself. Because it's really a book about confidence and self-esteem, but nobody wants to carry a book about self-esteem on the subway.
Right.
So this seemed cooler. And so I went with that. And it really is, it's a book about the practices of having confidence.
Oh, okay. And so I also, you are a science goddess. Exactly what does that mean?
This is a self-appointed title because it sounds boring to say you're an applied science writer. But what I do is I read all the scientific studies in an area and then I translate them into ordinary language that we all understand, make them a little funny and dark. And then I turn the science into practical advice that we can live by. So it's understandable and then it makes a difference in our lives.
And the thing you write about how a lot of people, you know, don't have guts or confidence. What is there like a primary cause for the lack of confidence?
Well, I guess some people have childhood experiences where they're just kicked around. That happened to me. And so you develop a sort of position in life and you see that, okay, I've got to behave in these ways so I don't get my butt kicked by all these bullies. And so that is adaptive when you're a kid, but then you grow up and you have the same practices, you know, like you're wearing the same shirt you wore when you were five.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense, but we don't, because it's the way we are and it's hard to look at yourself, we don't really realize, oh, I could do things differently.
And so if we don't do that, whatever trauma happened as a child, we're still acting that way as adults.
Exactly. It defines your adult life, which is terrible.
Yeah, it's a hard way to live.
It's a hard way. And also, you know, you don't reach your potential as a person. You may have all this potential, and because you're still acting like you're five and there are bullies chasing you home from school when you're 45, you're stuck, and you have not given the world what you could give the world if you had changed yourself and had the courage to transform.
You call yourself a science help and not a self-help. What's the difference?
Well, I think a lot of the self-help authors are not, they just sort of, they have an idea, and it may or may not be proven in terms of the science, and I want to give you something better. I look at, okay, well, here's what I think. Am I right about this? What does the science say? And it's often so fascinating. We'll believe one thing, we all do intuitively, and the science will say something different. And so that's one area of this. I looked at gift giving. I'm writing about this week. And we believe, you know, I thought that those registries when people get married are a tool for the lazy to buy gifts for the greedy, which is actually, I'm totally off base. People who have those registries find the gifts from them more thoughtful, more personal, and they appreciate them more than the gifts that you know, you search 300 hours at an estate sale and get them this thing that you think they want. But you're buying, what you're doing is you're looking from your perspective. You're saying, what would I want rather than what would they want? And so that's an area where, look, I was wrong, but I'm always willing to be wrong, to say, what does the science say? And to be open-minded and to give advice that's based in something and not just put out some cute fiction.
You went through a lot as a little girl growing up. Were you raised by both parents?
Yes.
Your father and mother were there.
Yes. And I have to say, I loved your work on, you know, to support intact families because it's so, so important.
It's crucial.
I see that in anthropology, you know, how vital it is to have the stable family situation to grow up in. So I did have both parents. But we were a Jewish family. My parents moved to a neighborhood. There were no Jews. And I liked being around all sorts of people, which is why I live in L.A. But they didn't like us and told me I killed Jesus. Hi, I'm six. I don't even kill bugs.
They told you you killed Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, I read that.
Horrible.
So you grew up in America.
Yeah.
And in California.
No, in Detroit suburbs.
Oh, in Detroit.
Yeah.
So you grew up mostly around black people?
No, I wish. I mean, this is what I love here, and I do work. I'm a volunteer mediator at City Hall. I do free dispute resolution.
You volunteer to do that?
Yes, and I think it's really important to do volunteer work. And so I do that one day a week, and one of the things I love is that I talk to all sorts of people from everywhere, all races, every kind of person, and that's what I missed in Michigan. I grew up in, I call it Borington Hills. It's really Farmington Hills. Very, very white, very, very boring, and then just mean children. I didn't have friends till I was 15.
So you grew up around predominantly white Christians?
Yes.
Because I'm trying to figure out why did they say you killed Jesus.
Well, I guess.
So you're a Jewish family growing up in a white community, predominantly white Christians. And so when you went to school, the little kids, they tease you for being a Jew, and they say you killed Jesus. What was that like?
It was terribly painful. I had no friends. I feel like I would have been a childhood suicide, except that I didn't have the guts to kill myself. And also, the thing that saved me was books. I went to the books. My mom took me to the library. I would take home laundry baskets of books. And I read. And reading showed me, look, there's a different world out there. Maybe this isn't a life sentence to be this person, be treated the way I'm treated. And I think that I saw that, a little ray of hope, and then I got out of there as soon as possible.
What type of things? So kill Jesus, and what other things they would say to you?
Kids would just bully me. The redhead is dead. Nice. I mean, really horrible. And when you have no friends, not even one friend, it's such a lonely, terrible childhood. And I think it's really important for parents to tell their kids, if a kid has social capital, if a kid is the popular kid, that they need to look for the kids like me, the lost kids, the kids who are bullied, the kids no one likes, and to take them in and to make them a part of their circle, because it's such a painful, terrible thing.
How old were you when they first started teasing you?
Probably first grade. I don't remember kindergarten, so, you know, that young. And then in junior high, girls threw chairs at me. They chased me down the halls. But a cool thing happened. When I started running, my column started running in the Detroit Alternative Weekly. This woman wrote me and she said, do you remember me? I was one of the women who bullied you in junior high, and I'm sorry.
Wow.
If someone says I'm sorry, I don't hold the grudge. I respect them. And I just thought that was one of the coolest things that happened to me related to my whole upbringing, that she said she was sorry.
They would throw chairs at you?
They sort of hurled them down the hall. I was a skinny little scrawny kid. And they were bigger than I was, and they were just older girls bullying. It was a gang of about four or five, and it was anti-Semitic stuff again. Just very ugly, terrible.
And so would you go home and tell your parents about it?
So this is why it's important to have a dad. And I guess your mom, if you have a strong mom, could do this also. But my dad went to junior high school and talked to Mr. Townsend, the principal, and said, look, this is happening. No, this is not okay. It needs to stop. Do something. And I don't remember how it stopped, but it did stop. It can sometimes escalate if you're, you know, someone, a parent intervenes.
Right.
But somehow this stopped, and I just had the usual sort of, like, you know, being ostracized in junior high school. I was a weird, smart kid.
So did you have friends in school?
No, not until I was 15 and I joined my Temple youth group. At Temple Bethel.
Were there other Jewish kids in school that you went to?
There were. So my junior high was in more of a Jewish mix, but I was, once you get a reputation as being uncool, it sort of follows you like cooties. So I was uncool. Everyone knew I was uncool, and I just didn't have friends.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so why didn't they take you out of the school and put you into a Jewish school or something?
I wanted to actually go to a special school for gifted kids. I hate saying that because it sounds like a braggy, weird thing. But my parents, they're sort of middle class, normal parents, and they thought, like, no, public school's fine. And so I didn't do that. But then Temple Youth Group, I didn't have that reputation following me. No one knew me, and I was popular, and it was so weird because on the weekends, I had friends, and I was somebody, and then during the week, I was nobody and ostracized, so it was this weird back and forth that happened.
And so how did you see yourself growing up that way? How did you see you?
How did I see me? I don't know that I looked at myself, like saw myself, in terms of, I think I felt lonely. I don't think I was that introspective about who am I. I just realized that something about me made me not fit in. And I understand this better from the perspective of science, the way I look at things now, understanding what self-esteem really is, which is not you like you, but it's actually a monitoring system. Very few people know this. Self-esteem, the you like you thing makes no sense in terms of our evolved psychology, right, which is to backtrack a little bit. We have an antique psychological operating system guiding us based on what would have worked for us in ancestral times for mating and survival. And so the idea that you like you, how would this help you run away from the bear or succeed as a cooperator? What self-esteem seems to be is our appraisal of what other people think of us and then our feelings in the wake of that. So if everyone likes you, hey, I'm cool. And then you feel good. And so that tells you keep doing what you're doing. So it's adaptive. Keep doing what you're doing is the message. And then if you are unpopular, you realize that, oh, they don't like me. Maybe they're going to be violent toward me or bully me. I better sort of duck out of the way. So it tells you that's adaptive. It tells you behave this way, sort of duck down, don't be too big for your britches, and then you'll survive that way.
So you were close to your father?
My parents were sort of weird and cold, actually. I mean, they raised us with good values. But I look at this now. I'm the one friend. I don't have children. I find them loud, sticky, and expensive. So that's my joke about them. However, as a person who didn't have very cuddly, loving, warm family upbringing, even though that was the fiction that was put out, I mean, right, I wouldn't have admitted this. My mom died, and so now I will admit this publicly. It's the big if in the book. Yeah. Well, wait, why were you this person? And it's like, if you're not loved, that's a really big thing. If your mother's cold and competitive with you and mean to you, so my friends who have children, they'll be, oh, I'm so sorry, I need to like talk to my child. I'm like, no, it's fine. And I really respect great parents who are there for their kids and who are loving. You can, if you don't light your house on fire, you know, you can pretty much do a lot that's not that all that great as long as you are loving and supportive of your children.
Did you get a chance to forgive your mother for not showing you love?
I think in part because of what I do and that I realize that all humans are fallible. I don't think she wasn't an evil person. It was just it's the personality she had.
What was her personality like?
Narcissistic. Oh.
That's very, like most women.
I don't know. I wouldn't say most women. From what I know, most women
are
like that.
I haven't met one yet.
A woman.
Maybe you.
I don't think I'm narcissistic. I'm driven and I'm self-oriented in that way. But my mother, when you have a child, it's so important to be for them as opposed to being for you and to be competitive with your child. My mom, when I went to New York, my mom was very smart. She was a high school valedictorian and was on the radio and then had kids and was unhappy as a mother. Oh. I don't have children because I might chase them around with a wooden spoon, and I recognize that. And I sort of mentor some kids and I speak at a high school and do some things to be helpful to kids. But I knew better. And so my mom, though, when I had the life she wanted, when I was going off to New York, she said to my sister, I hope she has to be a waitress.
Whoa. You know,
like that. Like, what is that? Like being a quadruple amputee? I mean, a waitress is a perfectly fine job.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, and I work as a writer, but a waitress would be okay too. Yeah. You know, as long as you pay the bills
Love
and everything.
The job.
But my mother, that kind of looking down on people and competing with her own daughter, that's very ugly. And I wish I had a different kind of parent, but I didn't.
Did your father know she was treating you that way?
My dad was just a little checked out about all of it. Uh-huh. So he wasn't a bad guy, and my parents had good values. They taught us to be good people. And so I appreciate that. I appreciate what I got from them. I'm sad for what I didn't. And I just, that's why I'm supportive of my friends who are mothers, you know, where they always apologize for spending time with their kids. But look, you had a child. It's really important. You have very limited time. And be a loving mom. Yeah. I'm all there for you.
Is your father still living?
Yeah, he has some dementia, so he's not all
father
there.
My father is with that.
I'm so sorry.
So you never did personally go to your mother and forgive her for the way she treated you while living, right? Do you regret that?
No, I don't. She wouldn't have admitted that she'd ever done anything wrong. That's part of being a narcissist and not having empathy and everything.
Yeah.
But I don't hold it against her. That would be a big poison stone within me.
Yeah.
She just she had the personality she had. I got the bad roll of the dice in some ways, you know, but in other ways, I had a roof over my head. I got to go to camp. They paid for my college. Of course, that was in the 1600s when Michigan University of Michigan was $3,500 instead of, you know, $70,000 or whatever it probably is now. It's crazy.
That is. Yeah. So did you date while growing up?
I did, and then I dated in New York, because boys like me, you know, when I was a teen, 15, 16, but I really didn't know how to be a girlfriend until I worked on myself, because I think that women do this often, or maybe people do this often, that I was looking for a guy who was successful, because I didn't know who I was, so I thought, I'll just latch onto somebody who has it figured out. But that's different than being a real partner to somebody, which now I am. And I can be a really good girlfriend and be appreciative of the things my boyfriend does for me and notice them and be loving. And I'm not controlling. We're not married. We've been together 17 and a half years.
What?
Right.
What so, the?
I know. But it just...
Why are you married?
I just didn't feel a need to get married. And so he keeps coming back. You know, if you're loving to somebody and kind and you've got their back and you support them in what they do and you call them on the stuff that they're, you know, when they sort of are not acting in their best interest, that's being a loving partner. And so I'm that kind of partner. And so, and we have fun. He's fun.
Amazing. And so are you still insecure in any way?
I think that, well, I say I'm 80% healed and 20% of me is still the old, you know, like, oh, I should leave. No one wants to hear from me. But the 80% now talks to the other part. This is stuff I talk about in the book.
Yeah.
It's acting. If you repeatedly act as the person you want to be, I call it impersonate your way to the new you, rather than fake it till you make it, which doesn't work for some reasons, because you actually try to remember all the things you're supposed to do. Let's see, I should stand up straight, I should talk like this, and then I should not fiddle with my hands, and then what was I going to say? And what happens is cognitive overload. Our mental whiteboard, our working memory, can only hold 5 or 7 things at once, and you remember so much stuff that it all falls apart. You can't pitch the guy that you're going to pitch while you're remembering to stand up straight and do everything else.
Yeah.
And so what I did when I was really insecure, one of my sort of mantras is don't let your feelings be the boss of you.
Yeah.
I would go out and I would impersonate somebody in my life who was confident. My old producer boss, Kathy. She was very confident, and I would go into a deli, and if some bad thing happened, say that they kept my change or something, I would be Kathy and say, oh, excuse me, I'll need my change back. And so what happens then, I'm not remembering all these little things. I'm putting on somebody as an act. I'm not a very good actress, but in my mind, I'm Kathy. And so, and there's this kind of little secret joke going on. So it's kind of fun. And so then you see by being that confident person, wow, people don't chase me out with a broom. They actually sort of treat me with respect and sometimes give me what I want. And so you do that over and over, and then you just transition to doing it as you. You stop being Kathy, and you do the confident thing. Excuse me, I think that's my change, you.
So that's the way you prevent feelings from controlling you.
Well, that's the way that you transition to this new person. So my default personality is now this confident person. So what happens is there's a line, neurons that fire together, wire together, and what that means is basically your brain cells, when you do an action, Bob neuron fires and Fred neuron fires, you try some new thing and they're doing that, and then you do it again and Bob's like, hey, Fred, Bob, you know, hey, you were going to the same place, let's just carpool, basically. And so they wire together into sort of what I call a think pack. And so what that means is it becomes automatic for you to behave that way.
Amazing.
It's just, and it's so cool because now, you know, I speak up. Hey, where are we going? What's happening? Wait, I'm not good with this.
Yeah.
And when you're like that, when you have real confidence, it's not angry. You can just say firmly, oh, wait, excuse me. You know, you've got cool confidence.
Do you have anger?
Well, I'm angry at injustice. And I can get angry. I'm a little bit hot-headed. I'm not as great as I'd like to be in the heat of the moment. So I try that. I try to remember, okay, slow
you
down.
You give your boyfriend a hard time at times?
Well, a hard time because I have ADD and I forget things and I'm a little bit confused about things sometimes. But he's very kind and he really is lovely. He makes me all this nice food because I'm a writer and I really work hard on my stuff. And so I would just eat raw hot dogs all day. So he makes me this nice food. So, I mean, that's so loving and wonderful.
Is there a difference between confidence and self-esteem?
Confidence is predictive. that I tend to do well, you know, when I ask for things, so I'll ask for things, that you predict that it's going to go well again. And self-esteem, again, is this monitor of how we are received socially. And so even though it's thought of as I like me or I don't like me, that actually, that's not supported by the research. It's so interesting that it's our appraisal of other people's appraisal of us and then how we feel and then react in the wake of that.
What's your degree in?
It's a BFA in film and television. I only even finished college because I realize some people are prejudiced against people who don't have a degree, but I was showing your producer, I'm a terrible slob. So I'm at my desk and I print out studies and I just throw them behind my desk. There's a little mountain range of what I'll read this weekend. Yeah. So I don't need anybody to grade me to read things.
Right.
And so college is just sort of, okay, I'll finish because you sort of need to finish, or maybe some people won't hire you.
And so you finish in film.
Yeah, I went to University of Michigan for 3 years, and then I was so determined and thrilled to get to New York. I ran off to New York. I got a scholarship. I wrote something and got a scholarship and used the money to go beyond the cost of Michigan to go to NYU for my last year.
Speaking of self-esteem, when I was growing up, you know, I had a big head like my father. I had a cleft lip, and the tears used to tease me. But I can't remember it. Sometimes I think it bothered me a little bit, but not a lot. Because my grandparents were so competent, you know, they were, you know, it taught me to fight for myself, defend myself, and all, so I never really had that issue. But I noticed that I did have some anger about it. But once I overcame the anger of it, I no longer felt a lack of self-confidence, or I never felt that kind of way because I let go of the anger.
That's so, so interesting that you did that, and how powerful that you were able to do that, and how wonderful that you had a supportive family. You see the difference. I just hear the difference between our different families, the cold sort of upbringing of my parents, and that you had these supportive grandparents.
Yeah.
You know, and that's such a difference to have not just one generation of a family, but to have multi-generations there. It's really important for us to be around older people, and the transient way many of us live, we're in these communities, everyone's sort of, you know, 20 to 50, 20 to 60, and we're not around older people, and they have a lot to offer us.
So how do you see your physical look today? When you see yourself in the mirror, what do you see?
It's because I do the science work, I'm 55, I'm going to be 56.
Are you?
Yeah, I really
don't. I didn't know that.
I really don't.
I never would imagine that.
Well, thank you.
I thought you were younger.
Thank you. It's sunblock. You know, all these women buy expensive makeup. All you need is really good sunblock, and then you can wear Revlon, you know. But I don't care as much. I want to look nice, and also I'm big in fashion. I wear evening gown skirts as day wear. This is one of my more sort of like casual ones.
Amazing.
But I love that. If I leave the house, I'm always dressed up. And that's really fun, but it's just not as important to who I am as it was in my 20s. You know, then you're really on the hunt then for a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And now I just look attractive and, you know, and I stay in shape. I eat low-carb, high-fat diet, which is really great.
Have you ever looked in the mirror and saw that you were beautiful? You thought, wow, I am beautiful. Red hair. Because your hair look beautiful.
Thank you.
Ever looked in the mirror and thought, I am beautiful?
Well, I like my look. I don't say I am beautiful. I just like how I look. And
how would you describe your look?
Let's see. How would I describe it? I don't really describe it. I just red. The red hair has always been the thing.
You like it now?
I've always liked it, but I just
even
didn't like
it. Even
when
the kids tease you about it, you still liked it.
I just didn't like being bullied. But my nickname growing up was Flamey Amy, from one of my sisters, and I still friends from New York still call me Flame or Flamo, and so I like that. I like being different, not looking like most of the population.
What do you think about people who take antidepressant medication to try to feel better? Should they take that stuff, or should they overcome without it?
Well, I don't want to generalize because some people may be helped by those, but I think that there's, I'm not really prepared with the data on that, but it's something I'm looking at for the book I'm writing now.
Yeah.
Antidepressants seem to be not as effective as people think they are. And also the thing is that depression may be adaptive, which means that emotions are motivational tools. They tell us that we're doing something wrong or right in our life. And so if you get, for example, in the Stone Age, if you were chipping away at a tree trying to get to the stake inside, you'd get bummed out because if you didn't, you kept doing that, you'd die, you'd starve. Yeah. And so getting bummed out allows you to lie on the couch, think about what you were doing. Does this make sense? Should I do something different? So that's what I mean when I say depression is sometimes adaptive. And then there's maladaptive depression, which is your brain chemical, something is awry. And so I think it's wonderful that we can take some drugs.
Have you ever done that yet? Take drugs for depression or anything?
No, I take Adderall for ADD.
Oh, you do?
It's wonderful.
What's ADD?
It's actually ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but I don't consider it a disorder.
And so are you on a medication right now?
Probably still a little bit.
So if you were not on it right now, would you be like grouchy right now?
No. It doesn't change my mood. What happens is that my brain, it's like there are 30,000 squirrels running off in different directions. And this makes the squirrels sit down so I can write. I use it for writing only.
Oh.
And I was writing today and it's 4 hours. It has, maybe it's like it works for 4 hours. So they're probably still a little bit, but
yeah.
it doesn't really, I don't need it to speak. I need it to focus and write.
So when you say your brain, you mean you have all kind of thoughts running through your head like crazy?
And it's a wonderful thing. My brain makes connections that other people's might not. It makes me funny. It makes me put together ideas other people don't. So that's why when it's called a disorder, it has some costs. I'm disorganized. I'm forgetful. I'm messy. But it's really fantastic. And I manage those things. I have an editor who edits me so I can... Sometimes I have trouble choosing which funny line is the funniest. And he helps me organize, but that's some of the cost of it.
One quick thing I want to ask, is there one thing you wanted to do in life? Let's say you had not, it's hard to do it this way, but let's say you had not gone through the trauma with your parents or at school. What would you want to be doing in life right now?
I love what I'm doing. I love writing. I love writing science and making it funny. I would be doing exactly that. And the mediation's wonderful. It's so satisfying, helping people resolve their disputes.
How do you see men?
I really like men.
What do you like about them?
All the ways they're different from women. Physical strength, they take more risks. I really appreciate male heroism. I wrote a piece about that guy. Amazing guy, saw a baby being dangled off a balcony in Paris, fifth floor. He scaled that building.
I think I remember that story.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
People like that, you know, I mean, if you pulled a gun on me, I'd wet my pants. So cops, the cops who guard us at City Hall, firemen, you know, and so I'm not a physical hero, but I will stand up for people and ideas and justice.
So you're not into all that feminist thing, hate men, men are bad, rid of men.
No. In fact, I just wrote a piece for Penthouse Australia, which is really amazing, about how feminism is disempowering women and criminalizing being male.
Yeah.
And so many men are being accused. This guy, Boris Zivkovic, was accused of sexual harassment. He was a Scientific American blogs editor. He was never guilty. It never met the standard. He made a joke. Here's one example. He's at a restaurant. His wife's inside. He goes for a smoke with a science writer. He buys a flower for his wife. They give him two. He says, ha ha, oh, I guess one for my wife, one for my concubine. If you say that to me, that's funny.
Yeah,
I'll laugh.
Yeah.
She was uncomfortable, the woman. So, okay, then you know what? You speak up. You say, hey, I don't want to be spoken about that way. Okay, cool.
That's right.
3 years later, she writes a blog post that this was sexual harassment. She was uncomfortable. Hi. You know what? If you're a woman, you're uncomfortable, you speak up. And
yeah.
You understand women are higher in general in agreeableness. It's a personality trait. So they're more likely to be people pleasers. They're more likely to not say no and to not want to upset the status quo. And so if you recognize that, you can say, okay, well, that's the personality cartridge I came in with, but I can act differently. I can know
like that
I should
anymore.
Speak up. Well, I'm like that.
Yeah, that's
I
cool.
will always speak up, and sometimes to my detriment, but I look at, okay, what's the cost? I saved the mediation program here in LA. The city attorney was going to kill it, and I thought, okay, what's the cost for me to do this? Could I get dismissed from the program? Yes, maybe. And then also, they'll never hire me to revamp the science. Okay, but can I make money other ways? Sure.
That's
okay.
Right.
And so I went out, I was basically annoying in all media, wrote op-eds, was on the radio, and forced him to unkill the program. I mean, why kill a program where we're all volunteers and helps the poor? I work for free. I don't get a pension. I bring my lunch.
Amazing. You know,
helping my fellow Angelenos resolve their disputes that they can't resolve themselves.
And so how would you define a man? What is a man?
Person who has male gametes, has sperm. Ideally, well, the generic, because I could go, see, the ADD mind just went, it just went on this global thing. So these things for me, I look for a man who has heroism, integrity, like the tall thing too. Somebody with character. Men tend to take more risks. Men tend to be more career oriented. Women want more work-life balance.
So I guess women give you a hard time then for seeing men in this way.
Some do because it goes against the current victim. I call it victim feminism.
Yes.
And I really don't like that. It's terrible for women. And then also, it makes it impossible to have relationships with men. Nobody can make a joke anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's just crazy. And then these guys, people who are, I know something like this. There was this sort of bad word, bad men of media list. I'm not saying the bad word to be classy like your show. And one of the people accused, he was a guy in his 20s. And I think he was just a jerk. You know what? I was a jerk in my 20s.
Yeah.
It's a characteristic, right?
Yeah.
And then hopefully we learn. And so, but he wasn't some kind of sex criminal, but he lost everything. And so many people now are losing everything.
Yeah.
That happened to this guy, Boris Zivkovic, lost his career and his social world. And for what? Because these women, they were sort of vipers, and he was an Asperger's-y guy. You know, not a lot of social savvy. That's the characteristic of having Asperger's. And so he was an easy target. So did he do anything wrong? Being an easy target versus doing some kind of horrible behavior, those are different things.
I noticed that women who are doing those things to men, they don't seem to care that they are destroying the life of a human being.
In fact,
they seem to get joy from it or something.
I think that the thing I see in common with some of these women, I looked at them and I thought, you know, some of them, they haven't done that well in the mating sphere. Maybe they're not that attractive, or they're just not gorgeous. And they haven't done that well in the work world. And the thing is that maybe they didn't work very hard, but they thought, where's mine?
Yeah.
And so they're resentful, and they see that guy, the easy target, the guy without the social savvy, and they take him down. And it's just such a sick and horrible thing. I'd like to see change.
It's awful. I've seen so many men be destroyed for no reason.
For no reason.
No reason at all. Do you give men advice?
Yeah.
And can you give me an example of what type of advice you would give to men?
Well, that's sort of a wide open question. I give my column, The Science Advice Goddess, is relationship, sex, dating, relationship advice. And I basically, to men and to women, give them advice on what's realistic.
Yeah.
And here's how women may be prone to think, and here's what can get you in trouble, or here's that it's okay. It's okay. Well, one bit of advice. So men, women, we evolved because, again, our current psychology with our iPhones and our drones is mismatched with our environment. We have antique psychology, perfect for an ancestral environment. So in that environment, there was no birth control. Women could get pregnant. So women evolved to go for men who are providers, who showed a willingness and ability to invest. Men evolved to go for something different because they could just sort of like, you know, have sex and run. And so men are, they have a priority of looking for women to be attractive. And so men are much more looks driven than women are. Women will go for a good looking guy if they can, but if they have to choose, if there's a mating budget, which is this great research from this guy Norman Lee, he looks at, well, what if you have to choose? If you only have this many dollars to spend, mating dollars, then women will prioritize finding a guy who's got the great job, secure job, who's going to commit, and looks come maybe as a weak chin. But that's the thing you have to trade off.
Does confidence come from God? Can you develop confidence without a belief in God?
Yes, because I'm an atheist.
Are you an atheist?
But I'm not one of those. I'm going to be 56. So I'm not some angry atheist.
Right.
I don't have to be disrespectful. You know, people who believe in God, great, that works for you. You know, something different works for me. But, you know, I see some... You know, there's helpful stuff there in religion, and you don't have to believe in God to, because not everybody does. Some people really question, is there a God, who go to church or temple? And I see some of the beliefs, like, for example, in Judaism, the highest form of, it's called tzedakah of charity, is helping somebody help themselves to become self-sufficient. Yeah. And so these values, you know, that's a way to have meaning in your life. And so while you're working on yourself, you know, to be extending yourself for other people is a way to feel really good about yourself, even if you're still a work in progress. So that's an example of religion being really a good
thing.
When
you say you are an atheist, what does that mean? You don't believe there is a God?
I just don't see evidence that there's a God.
But you believe there could be, you just don't see it?
Sure, there could be.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because I'm a scientific thinker, and so I don't see evidence for it, but I'm not opposed to it. If I saw evidence tomorrow, then, you know, then, okay, I believe, same as I believe in, okay, there are all these data that show this is the way many people are. Okay, I believe that.
So you believe that a real change is physical or spiritual?
Okay, so physical, that's an interesting question. So spiritual is the stuff, if you look at it, what is spirituality? It's, if you define it about what it's not, it's the things that aren't material. It's your inner life. And so that stuff I talked about having meaning in your life.
Right.
We think we chase happiness, doesn't work. You chase meaning, and the way you do that is by extending yourself for other people. And so the way to become confident, however, part of it, you know, you have to think about what's going on, but it's really, really mostly action-oriented.
Amazing.
That you do these actions repeatedly.
Let me ask real fast,
sure.
What do you do in those moments when you're by yourself and you feel unimportant, you feel like nothing, you feel empty? How do you deal with that today? How do you deal
with that? Okay, so one thing that's helpful is to use the third person to talk to yourself. And I'm sort of berate myself using bad language because it's funny.
Yeah.
And so that sort of gives me a little lift. And there's this great research by this guy, Ethan Cross, that shows that that third person talk gives you some distance from yourself. Like, hey, self, we know better than this. I mean, I will talk to myself like that when the 80%
goes. So I could be driving down the road one day and see you talking to yourself. I look over and I'm like, is that Amy?
That's
and
me.
You can be talking to yourself.
I talk to myself all the time. It's very helpful. It's and it, the fact that it's funny, a lot of the stuff in my books, there's a lot of dark humor because I feel like we need that to get through life. And I wanted to add one other thing too, a really great thing, one of the most important things I've discovered, and this is part of self-compassion research by this woman, Kristen Neff, is fallibility. She says one way to have self-compassion, to feel kind to yourself, to be kind to yourself, is to see our fallibility as something that connects us to other human beings. And that's a really important thing. I call our fellow humans co-humans. And that's what I see, especially from being a mediator, the way people are struggling and suffering. And so I see that. And so when I screw up, I just see it as, ha ha, that's normal. I mostly do things pretty well, but some things I do things pretty badly, and sometimes I'm really a jerk.
So you say you berate yourself. Amazing. That is amazing.
It's really fun.
Isn't it like amazing?
It's so great, and it helps you. I'm going to give you an example. I hurt my left hand, and I needed to shred some stuff in my garage. Now, like, nothing was in fire. The garage door is 3,000 years old. It's really hard to open, and instead of using this hand, I even used my worst hand, and I tugged it, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, you're behaving, what are you, a chimp? Like, you're this impulsive? Like, no, this is dumb. You're an idiot. Don't do this again. Idiot, idiot.
Amazing.
And laughing at myself that way, because I understand they're good parts of me, I accept those, and I accept the flawed parts of me, that now when I go to my garage door, I have a picture of a chimp in my head. No, don't do the chimp thing.
Wow. It is time to heat up this interview, folks. I got to throw my guest in the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly
Oh my God.
As possible. All right?
Okay.
The hot seat.
Should women be allowed to vote?
these are terrible. That's not an easy question. Well, I think that actually it would be better if a lot of people didn't vote because they're not that informed.
Lady Gaga or Katy Perry?
Lady Gaga.
Do you ever get confused by Kathy Griffin?
Yes.
Do you, would you prefer to date an alpha male or a beta male?
Oh my God, an alpha male.
Should feminists support Islam?
That's a really weird question. feminist support. I can't even answer that.
Is it possible to have perfect peace?
No.
Should you say no?
Yeah.
Should the world be more like America?
Yes.
Bloomberg or Bernie?
Oh my God, Bloomberg. Or a coffee mug, anyone, anything, like the chair instead of Bernie. My dog, a dead person in the street.
So Bloomberg or Bernie?
Bloomberg. Sorry, should, I didn't answer that well. I'm
sure illegal aliens get free health care?
No.
Is free stuff destroying the work ethics in America?
Free stuff, probably yes.
Do you love white people?
I love all people.
Do you love white people?
White people? Sure, them too.
Do you love white people?
Why do you ask that so many times? Yeah, white people, black people, all people. I mean, some people are jerks, but I'm a co-human.
Okay.
We're all co-humans.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, this is awesome.
It was amazing.
I'd come back anytime.
And I'll be glad to have you.
As long as you don't feel you used me up.
Okay. And the book is called The Un...
Ethology. Field Guide to Living with Guts and Confidence. You did that well, actually.
Ethology. Do you ever mistakenly and say the real word?
Oh no, because I realize that if I'm on the radio, they get $6 gazillion in FCC fines. So,
yeah.
And I don't want anyone to lose their job, so I'm super careful.
How can people get your book? All your books?
Amazon bookstores, Barnes and Noble. Yeah, and I'd be very grateful. It's the best thing I ever wrote, and it's very helpful.
Amazing. Well, I wish you well. It's a very, very interesting book.
I love talking to you, and thanks for reading my book and for having me on.
You're totally welcome. Thank you for coming on. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Let me hear from you. Don't forget to follow, like, sign, ring the bell, do all that good stuff, merch, and all of that. Thank you for your support. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next time on The Fallen State.
Due to the outbreak of the Chinese virus, folks, we are now in my radio studio. Which do you prefer, to save lives or save the economy?
New York is going to be a curious place if all of those restaurants and bars and shops go under. In South Africa, you can only get government funding or assistance for your business for Chinese virus if you are majority black. Owned.
I was watching 60 Minutes and they did a story on Hungary. They are motivating white people there to get married and have families, and they are refusing to let illegal aliens and aliens come into the country. And I was like, right on, about time some white people stood up somewhere.
There is something beautiful going on in this darkness.
There's nothing to be.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.
Pack up the stuff, it's not time to go. Nothing.